Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Bet, second to last line. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Omer l'shlucho, person sends out a messenger, a proxy, say, v'kidesh li isha, stop, says go out and marry for me a woman, doesn't give him any instructions as to whom, doesn't give him any instructions as to where, and the shliach goes out, and we don't know what happened. We don't get any information back from the shliach, either he passes away, or he's found in a different country, but for whatever reason, we don't get any information back with regards to this shliach. Asur, b'chol nashim shebo'olam. This individual is now restricted in all the women in the world. Chazaka, shliach oseh shlichuto. Because the assumption is that one is pointed to be a proxy, a messenger, that they carry out whatever instructions that they've been given, they've done. So our assumption is now that he did what he was asked to do, which is that he married a woman for this individual, except he gave kiddushin, granted kiddushin to a woman on behalf of this individual. B'kaven d'lo parishlei, since we don't know who this woman is, lo yada heiniu kadishlei, we don't know who he has kiddushin with, and since we don't know who he has kiddushin with, we can't assume that we know when he goes to marry any woman. Any given woman could be a relative of the woman he's already married to. Goes to marry a woman, could be that his sister is already married to him. It could be that her mother, her daughter, is already married to him because this shliach went ahead and was mikadesh and isha. And since he was mikadesh and isha, now we have no feedback about who the woman is. And therefore we have to assume that maybe anybody that he engages with is a relative. Now, Tosafot already raises the issue. Says, V'im tomar, v'kuli amai yasru lo yisayid nashim. Why is only this individual restricted in marrying a woman? Why isn't every man in the world now restricted from marrying a woman? Because maybe it's that woman that he was mikadesh on behalf of this individual. She could be an eshedish, possibly. You could say, as the Rabbeinu Tam says, just ask a woman. You ask her, are you married? And she's nemenet to say whether she has kiddushin or doesn't have kiddushin. So in terms of other people, there's a way to clarify the situation. Just simply ask, are you married or not? But even according to that, Tosafot points out, it's not so simple. Because it could be that a father accepted kiddushin on behalf of his daughter. And therefore the daughter doesn't really know whether she was nitkadeshet or not. And therefore you can't get full information. Even an outside party over here cannot get full information. And if her father had already passed away, we also are left in this safek that maybe nobody in the world should be able to marry a woman because of this safek that is generated. Be'esh lomar, Tosfot says, d'midoraita afilu hu shari li'isa, dazlinem batar ruva. He says, we go back to the robe. On the robe, if any woman that we bump into is unlikely to be a relative of the woman that the shliach married on his behalf, and same for others. Anybody else marrying a woman, you can assume, alarov, this woman is not the woman that was married by the shliach. So then, why is he asur over here? He says it's a knas. And v'enuela knasa ba'alma shasa shliach stam. There's a penalty that we assign to him because of the way that he conducted himself. He went ahead and he sent out a shliach without any information, without any guidance, to just marry any woman. And so therefore we're penalizing him because he did something inappropriate, right? He was not so smart about this situation. And so because of that, we penalize him and say now that he's a sur to marry women because of the way that he conducted himself. Now, Tosafot goes on and asks that we're going to see in the Gemara that an isha is what we call kavua, that she's considered to be stationary, and therefore she's not someone who is parush miruba or coming up the road. And b'chom kavua, it's like 50-50. And that means that we're dealing with a problem that is actually problematic midoraita, not just like Tosafot says over here, midorabanan, because your assumption is that any woman is parush miruba. That assumes that the woman is a item that moves and leaves the robe. Over here, the Gemara is going to show us that the assumption is that a woman is a kavua. And if that's the case, we're dealing with the doraita level. And then not only should he be asur, forget about kenosa, he should be asur doraita, so should everybody else in the world be asur midoraita. So Tosafot says here, the answer is, the only time you say that kavua is mechsa mechsa it's kishya isur nikar li atzmo, the heter nikar li atzmo. You can only call something 50-50 when at some point there was a delineation of what was asur and what is mutar. Now they got mixed up, and we consider it as if there's 50-50. But that's assuming that you knew at one point, this is asur, this is mutar, and then they got mixed up. Over here, this individual has no clue what was asur, what was mutar, in order to say now that it's kikavua. Or anybody else in the world didn't know about the isur, and therefore, how can you deem it kemechsa amechsa? Now many Rishonim ask, probably along the lines of what you're suggesting, which is, the guy who did it, the shliach, knows who he was mikadesh, or the woman knows that she was nitkadeshet. So even though we don't know, or even though the mishaleach doesn't know, nevertheless, somebody knew, at some point we knew there was an isur, and somebody could have identified what the isur was. So that's why a number of Yishonim don't like Tosafot's answer, and therefore they give alternative answers, most of which revolve around this idea, or this concept of Chazaka Shliach Ose Shlichuto, which according to the Rabbeinu Tam, is only a principle Dirabanan. So once it's a principle Dirabanan, that Chazaka Shliach Ose Shlichuto, then the Rabbanan can determine how to operate it, or how to engage it. And over here, they did it in such a way that only the person who was the Mishaleach is bound by the Chazaka, and not others. Other Rishonim don't necessarily subscribe to this view that Shliach Ose Shlichuto is only midrabanan, but what they say is Shliach Ose Shlichuto is only a chazaka when it's in the control of the shliach to do it, when he can exercise full control over the outcome. In this case, that's not true, because he needs another party to acquiesce to create kiddushin. He might be able to go out and be mikadesh a woman. He still needs an accepting woman on the other side. So it's not 100% chazaka over here. If the shliach, all he had to do was operate on his own and exercise whatever powers or controls or complete whatever task that he had in hand, then we would assume shliach ose shlichuto. But over here, because he needs another party to agree or consent to what he's trying to do, we don't say that this is shliach ose shlichuto 100%, and therefore the chazaka is weakened, and we have a second chazaka, which is chazaka that a woman is a pnuya. In general, there's a chazaka that a woman is a pnuya, unless we have evidence to the contrary, she's considered to be a pnuya. So that chazaka will offset this weakened chazaka that here maybe the shliach cannot carry out his shlichut. So those are the different ways that the Rishonim approach dealing with this, why only this individual is asur, and why we don't really worry about this at a doraita level. They're trying to drop it to a rabbinic level, because otherwise everybody should be asur in the world. The answers vary from the Tosafot saying that we didn't identify clearly the Isur beforehand, whether Chazaka Shliach Ose Shlichuto is only a Din Der Abonon, or Chazaka Shliach Ose Shlichuto is not complete Chazaka here because it's not completely in his control. Etevei Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan. So Reish Lakish challenges Rabbi Yochanan about this position that he has, which is Kan Stuma. So you have a pair of birds, where the birds have yet to be identified as to what their purpose is. A cane, in general, is a pair of birds that are brought as korbanot for individuals who are chayavim to bring a korban, like a zav, a zava, and a yoledet. And generally, they involve one chatat and one ola. You have a right along the way to define which one's a chatat, which one's an ola. The balim, at the time that they purchase them, have a right at that moment. If they don't exercise that right, the next time is when the kohen is bringing them to be makriv them, he can identify them. So we're talking about a kan stuma, means it's a pair of birds that were set aside for these korbanot, but they have yet to be identified which one's the chatad and which one's the olah. Shepacha gozel achad mehem, one of the birds flew away, lavir olam, somewhere else. O shepacha leben chatota metot, or it flew into a group of birds that are chatot, but they're chatota metot. Chatata meta is a lacha l'moshe misinai, that there are certain chataot that if something happens, then if they still remain around, that chatat is kept in such a manner that it will die because it's no longer useful. One of the main categories is chatat shenit kapru baleha, chatat where the balim already attained kapara through a different vehicle, whether that's another korban or whatever they did, then it's the mita. So over here you have a bunch of those chatot hanging out and it flies in there. Now you can't identify it anymore. O shemeit echad mehen, or one of the two birds dies, igach zug l'sheni. Then you just take a pair for the second one. Because you take another bird to fill in for the missing bird. So here, because the whatever bird is there, whether it's a chatat or a la, we don't know because it wasn't identified. So you simply just have to bring in another bird, and now you're back to having a kan stuma like you had beforehand. Now, the way the Rosh and the Tosafot learn over here, that this is the end of the Gemara. The Gemara does not continue over here. And Ein Ochanami, the Gemara could have brought the case of kan mifureshet as well, an identified group of birds, but then it would have been more complex. So we'd have to say which one flew away. If we don't know which one, what happens in any of those scenarios? It's too many permutations. So the Gemara just brought the case of kan stuma, but Ein Ochanami could have brought kan mifureshet. Our Gemara has a girsa that includes that a case of kan mifureshet, vizir v'ilu kan mifureshet, ein lo takana. It's a kan mifureshet, then there's no way to solve the problem, because you don't know which one flew away. Assuming that you don't know which one flew away, you don't know if it was the olah or the chatat that flew away, then in that scenario, you don't know which one you're trying to replace. So if you bring in a new bird, you don't know whether to make that bird an olah, or to make it a chatat, because you don't know which is the remaining bird that you have over here. You did know, but now one of them flew away, and you don't know. Oh, right. The Balei Tosafot say, the way that the Rishonim explained it over here is that when they're next to each other, you can tell them apart. You can know which one you made into olah, which one a chatat. When one of them flies away and you're just left with one, you don't have that contrast between them to know which one you're talking about now. So now, even though, you're right, at one point he knew which one was the olah chatat, he needs to remember which one it is, even though there's a whole Masechet Kinim where he forgets and doesn't remember, but nevertheless, assuming that he knew, once one of them leaves, he loses that perspective because there's no longer a contrast, and he doesn't know which one is the olah chatat, therefore he doesn't know which one to replace, and because of that, there is no takana. Now, Reish Lakish's question is, V'ilu shar kinim ba'alma mitaknan. We don't say, based on this, that all the other birds in the world are now problematic. I mean, we don't say that if someone else goes to bring a korban, that maybe he picked up this bird that flew away from the original cane of this individual who had an idea, this kan stuma that was there. We don't assume that it flew away from there. Or, when you go to shech the bird to eat for chulin, we don't assume that that bird came out of the kan stuma of this individual. Why not? V'amai, le'imo kochan v'chado. Let us say about each bird. Dil mahai nihu. Maybe that's the bird that we were talking about. Now over here, you have to differentiate from the case before. In the case that Rabbi Yochanan, he says he only penalizes, or the person that's problematic is the guy himself who sent the shliach. Whereas the rest of the world is not a sur. Over here, the assumption of Reish Lakish is that we would worry about this for everybody, not just for the individual who caused the problem. Now, the reason being likely is because in the case before, the guy did something or instructed a shliach in a manner which was inappropriate. And so because of that, we penalize him, we don't penalize anybody else. Over here, when the bird flew away, we don't necessarily say that this guy acted inappropriately. Birds fly away, that's what happens. Now, you could say he should have watched it a little better. So maybe there we could also incriminate him in a sense for the bird leaving. But you could also argue here that even if you just suggest in this case that the person whose birds it was is penalized, then the Mishnah still doesn't say that. The Mishnah says that everybody is mutar. Not only is everybody else mutar, but so is the individual who had these birds is also a sur. So you see from here that we don't worry about items that fly away or go away and are randomly in a grouping. They were once a sur, they disappear. We don't assume that everybody in the world is that individual. Not by the woman. We shouldn't assume that any woman that you approach is either related to or is that woman herself. And also by the birds. We don't assume that any bird you pick out of the, randomly out of the wild is this bird that flew away. How come the cases are not parallel? Reish Lakish is saying, according to you, Rabbi Yochanan, we don't have a parallel case to that which happened in Kinim. Mar says, Amalei kamina ano isha delo naido. I am talking about a case of a woman who is stationary. V'amart li at isura denaid. And you're talking to me about birds that move. There's a big difference between the two. Because when you're talking about birds, birds fly away, they move around, they're not stationary. Therefore, you have what's called a random sample. Anytime you take a bird, you're taking it called the parish, miruba parish. He's coming from the road, because you can assume since they are mixed up, and you are now taking a bird, you can assume it's a random selection out of a much larger group, and therefore you can assume statistically that you're not getting the bird that flew away. On the other hand, by a woman who is stationary, doesn't get mixed up or change her location, then the assumption is that once she is the one that is asur, you're not now taking out of a random sample. Anytime you approach a woman, that woman is not a random sample out of the greater rove, because the possibility is that this woman is the woman, and we don't know where she is, but she's not, the woman that is problematic is not part of a random sample. She is in a known location, in a known place. We don't know what it is, but that is kemechsa mechsa dummy. And statistically, you can't claim that it's out of, it's a random selection out of the rove. Where it says, v'chi teim ha'ochanami na'it, let us say also by a woman that she's not stationary necessarily. Imor b'shuk ashkach v'kodesh. Let us say that he bumped into her in the marketplace, and he established kiddushin with her in the marketplace. So when you establish kiddushin in the marketplace, then the woman then leaves the marketplace. That's not her place of residence. And therefore, she's going to go away. Or you can just say that the woman in the shuk is picked from amongst many women in the shuk. So how do you know? It says, Hotam hadra l'nichuta. A woman always goes home. Gabi kain mihadra. By the case of birds, who says that they're going home? So that says, by a woman, and this is very interesting, the Mefresh says over here, kol kvodabat melech pnima, that a woman's honor, tiferet, glory, crowning, is her household, as in being in the house, meaning that her place is in the building of the family, and the establishment as a house, as a makom of kedusha, and therefore we would expect to find the woman in that context. So therefore, even though she might go out to the shuk, the shop, she might go to the supermarket to shop, nevertheless, she always comes back to the house. That's her place of residence, that's her primary place, and therefore, she's considered to be a mechsa mechsa. On the other hand, a bird, even though birds tend to come back to their nests, their roost, nevertheless, first of all, over here, we already know that it left. The bird already took off. Number two is, if it returns, then we know the bird. We don't have a problem anymore. The fact that it hasn't come back means that it's already taking flight, and it's somewhere else, and it moves around. Birds aren't as stationary, and aren't as married to their nest or roost, that like a woman is. And therefore, that's considered to be called the parish merubah, parish by the birds. By the woman, it's considered to be mechsa mechsa, because statistically, you can view them differently. Birds are part of a larger random sample, and therefore every bird that you take, you basically assume is coming out of that larger selection, because we just can't identify or know where it is. On the other hand, a woman, you don't say that, because even though technically as you approach the woman, that woman is a random sample out of many women, but nevertheless, each woman, because of her finite movement and location, is therefore really an independent item, and not part of a larger statistic sample that you would say, called the parish, meruba parish, and you would deem it as if mechso mechsa. Amar Rava, umode Rabbi Yochanan b'isha she'en la lo bat, v'lo bat bat, v'lo bat ben, v'lo aim, aim, v'lo achot, that if a woman does not have any of these relatives, not a daughter, not a granddaughter, not a granddaughter through a son, not a mother, not a grandmother, and not a sister, so in that case where she doesn't have any of those relatives, then in Ochanami, you can marry this woman, because there's no longer a safek that this woman is a relative of the woman that the shliach was mikadesh on your behalf. This woman has no relatives. So therefore, you can be mikadesh tisha. She'll tell you she was never married, or if she was married, she wasn't married to this individual. And therefore, you could marry this woman without any problem. Now that can be for a number of reasons. Either, like you said, she's a gioret, case where she is converted, and therefore she has no relatives halachically, and therefore that's why there's not a problem. Or, it could be a case where she literally does not have these relatives. She's an orphan. She is a sole survivor of her family, and therefore she has no relatives. Or, it could be, like the case the Gemara is about to identify, a case where all her relatives are married. If all her relatives are married, it's the same thing as her having no relatives, because then the shliach could never engage those people in marriage, because they were already married, and since they're already married, she is a lone single woman in this family, then you know when you're getting engaged to her and she says she was never married, that you're not marrying the relative of the woman that the shliach was mikadesh. In addition, even though she had a sister who's now divorced, lachar mikan, later period, da'i sharia, she is still muteret. So even though she has a sister now who is single, nevertheless, that's okay. My taima. Now here, Tosfos brings two possibilities of what the word my taima means. Either it means, my taima means hechidami. What exactly is the case over here? And Tosfos says, Nalashon Nazir Mishuneh, that sometimes words that mean something throughout Shas, my taima means mahatam, what's the reason, everywhere else in Shas. Over here it means hechidami. What exactly is the case? Or Tosfos then brings an alternative view which says that my taima means mahatam. What is the reason over here that we do not worry about the fact that this single sister is possibly the woman that got engaged? The Ba'ishata de Ka'amarle Abanisivan the Gavre. Because at the time that he established the Shliach as his proxy, this woman was married to a man. So even though now she's single, but at the time that he established the person as a Shliach, she was married. Chimishave Shliach, the Milta de Kaima Kameh. Person only establishes a Shliach for things that are identifiable or relevant at the time. The Milta lo Kaima Kameh, lo Mishave Shliach. Something that is not relevant or meaningful at the time that he establishes the shliach, then the person does not have that in mind. Now, that has ramifications even if the shliach goes ahead and does it. So for instance, if a shliach went ahead and was mekadesh a woman who was married at the time he became a proxy, but was divorced by the time he got to her, that kiddushin would not take effect. It would not be a proper kiddushin because he's not empowered as a shliach to do such a thing. Because here we have an assumption that when a person identifies or creates a shliach, that he only has in mind that this shliach can execute on things that are available to him today or relevant to him today. Something that's not, even though in the future it will, we do not say that he is a shliach for that. And it's as if he has no power. He's not empowered to deal with those types of issues. And if he does it, he's acting on his own volition, not as a shliach for the individual. Now, why is this relevant to our Gemara? It's not our Mishnah. Hareini Nazir, Valai Legaleach Nazir. Person says, I am a Nazir, and I also sponsor another Nazir. Bishama Chabero, and his friend hears this, Ramar, Vani, Valai Legaleach Nazir. He says, me too, and I'm also going to sponsor a Nazir. Imayu Pichim, if they were smart about this, Mikachim Zedzeh, then they'll have to pay for one set of korbanot, they'll pay for each other. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. We'll each pay for each other's korbanot. And by that, we've accomplished both sides of the nether. We've both been a nazir, as well as paid for someone else's korbanot nazir. If not, megalchim nizirim acherim. If not, then they have to bring their own korbanot. Plus, they'll have to pay for someone else's korbanot. So they'll have to do two sets of korbanot, not just one. Bishlama batra'a. The second guy, ika kadma'a kameh. The second guy has the first guy who's already a Nazir. First guy already accepted to be a Nazir, plus he said he's going to sponsor. The second guy comes along and says, I'm going to be a Nazir and I'm going to sponsor. When he says I'm going to sponsor, the first guy is already a Nazir. He could be referring to the first guy. It makes sense that he would pay for his korbanot. But, ika kadmo, ela kadmo, the first guy, mi ika batro kameh. When the first guy says, I am a Nazir and I'm going to sponsor a Nazir, this second guy wasn't a Nazir yet. So when he said, I'm going to sponsor a Nazir, you're telling me that people don't have in mind things that don't exist or not relevant at the time? Guess what? The guy here was not a Nazir at the time. Now, guy number two is not a Nazir. And since he's not a Nazir, when guy number one says, I am going to sponsor someone's korbanot, he clearly did not have in mind that guy because he wasn't a Nazir yet. So if that's the case, why is he allowed to bring the korbanot on behalf of that guy? He wasn't a Nazir at the time he took the korban. Elo, hochi kamar. This is what you have to say. Im ishkachno davi Nazir, agalchei. If I find him to be a Nazir, I will take care of him. Which means that a person will, in essence over here, he takes a neder, which basically says that my obligation is to sponsor a Nazir. That means that by the time I come to sponsoring the Nazir, he just has to be a Nazir. He didn't have to be a Nazir at the time that I took the nether. He simply, in the future, as long as there's somebody who's a Nazir, I can sponsor them. But that would mean over here, Hachanami, in our case, that would mean, Hachikamale, Imishkacha, Demigarsha, Kodeshli. Then why don't we say the same thing over here? That the Shliach, when he was empowered, the guy says, go out and marry a woman for me. That means marry any woman who is available now, or any woman that is available when you get there. That means that even if she got divorced at a later time, she should still be a possible candidate for this Shliach to have married on behalf of this individual, and we should have to worry about it. If you're marrying this woman and she has a sister who was married at the time that the Shliach went out, but then was divorced, you should have to worry now, because possibly she accepted Kiddushim, even though at the time of setting up the proxy, the messenger, she was not an available party. So then how can you say over here that Moda Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan would agree that in a case where she was married at the time that they established the Shliach, but was divorced later on, that don't worry, you should worry, because the Shliach could have married this woman. So now the Gemara establishes a different principle with regards to a Shliach, Imre. What you have to say over here is, Lo Mishavi Ina Shliach, El Vemilto Demotzi Abdud Hashto. Person does not establish a proxy or a Shliach for something he himself cannot exercise or do at this moment. If he can't do it now, he doesn't create a Shliach to do that. Vemilto Lo Motzi Abdud Hashto, something that he does cannot do now, Lo Mishavi, he doesn't make a Shliach. When a person is establishing Shlichut, he has a certain perspective on the world. So we'd assume that whatever governs his perspective with regards to, like, for instance, Nazirut, and what he thinks about the time he takes that neder, so too, when he establishes a Shliach, he's empowering him to be the person themselves. So he will only empower or grant rights to the Shliach that he himself would have thought of or been within his purview. So now he, at that time, we're establishing now that he does think about things in the future. So too, you would empower the Shliach to do things that would possibly be available in the future. So if that's the case, why over here do you say when the woman was married at that time it's no good? So now the Gemara establishes a different principle with regards to a Shliach. A person does not establish a proxy or a Shliach for something he himself cannot exercise or do at this moment. If he can't do it now, he doesn't create a Shliach to do that. Now whether that means that's his mindset, most of the Rishonim read this as it's impossible. He can't create shlichut. If shliach shulcho shel adam kimoto, so that's one way it's expressed, is that it's a dovar shelo badi olam, something that's not here yet, and therefore you can't establish shlichut for something that's not here, or simply that if shulcho shel adam kimoto, he can only empower the shliach to make him as powerful as he himself now. He himself now is unable to accomplish this, so he can't create a shliach to do it in the future because that's not what he has power to do. He doesn't have power to establish something. He has power to do what he does now. That power he can transfer to the Shliach. But if he doesn't have that power now, he can't transfer something that doesn't exist to the Shliach, which is that in the future, I will be able to do this, so you too in the future will be able to do this. So that's what the Gemara now establishes. That's why it fails over here. By the case of Nazir, where he says, I'm going to pay for some Nazir, he has in mind things in the future because he could sponsor any Nazir today, or anybody's around, therefore someone else becomes a Nazir, he can also decide to make that person the person he's going to sponsor. But hereby, the Shliach, where the Shliach was empowered by the individual, this individual couldn't marry the woman who was married at that time, even though she's divorced in the future. So too, the Shliach is not granted rights to do or marry this woman, even if she becomes divorced in the future. Or that either by the case of Nazir, he's making a generic statement, and therefore it can cover even Nizirim in the future, as opposed to his appointing of a Shliach to do a specific action on his behalf. Or there's a difference between he himself accepting responsibility or taking a neder, which he has the right to execute now or even in the future, versus his appointing of a Shliach, which he can only do if he is empowered now to do it, versus in the future. Mar says below, is that really true? That people do not create Shlichim for something they can't do today, but they create a Shliach to do it in the future. Tashma, the case in Nidarim that we had. Omer l'apitropus shelo, a person who says to his executor of his estate, Kol Nidarim shetadur ishti mikan v'ad sheyavu mimokom ploni. Any neder that my wife takes from now until I return from such and such location, haferla, you should nullify them. Haferla, and he does do that. The executor of the estate does what he was asked to do, and he's made for any neder that the woman takes. Yochoye mufarim, you would think that this works. Talmud Omar, isha yitimena, isha yiferena. Divrei Rabbi Yoshaya. Rabbi Yoshaya says, ein achanami, it should work. But, we have a pasuk which says that only the husband can do afara, nobody else can do afara. There's no such thing as establishing a shliach for afara, because afara, the Torah requires, isha yiferena. The Baal himself must do the afara. Rabbi Yonatan Amar, matzinu b'chol makom, shlushucho shel adam kimoto. We find everywhere else in Shas that a shliach is the equivalent of the establisher of the shlichut, the mishaleach. Shliach functions as a proxy for the individual. And just like the individual could have been made for his wife's nedarim, so too he can have his proxy be made for the nedarim on his behalf. Shluchu shel adam works over here. It works over here. Even though, now number one, it's in the future. Even though right now, the husband can't be made for the nedarim because they don't exist. She hasn't taken the neder yet. And yet, he's establishing a shliach to do it on his behalf. That's from Rabbi Yonatan's side. The Gemara now will ask even from Rabbi Yoshaya. So those both, the Rosh point out here, they could have asked Rabbi Yonatan, but they wanted to show that the question comes from both opinions. Even from Rabbi Yoshaya, it's a question. Why? The only problem here is that you have a gzeirat hakatuv that shlichut doesn't work. Halav ochi, had it not been for the gzeirat hakatuv, apitropus mefer, it would have worked. So you have both Rabbi Yoshaya and Rabbi Yonatan saying, enoch anami, it works. Now Rabbi Yoshaya says it fails because of gzeirat hakatuv. But technically they both think it works. Vilu gabi didei tanyo. By the man himself, we have a brighter that says, Omer liishto, kol nedarim shetaduri mikan v'ad shavu mimakom ploni, any neder that you take from now until I come back from such a location, you kayamim. I am now affirming them. Lo amar klum. It's meaningless what he says. And the reason that the kiyum doesn't work is either because you cannot be mikayim something that is yet to be in existence, you cannot affirm something that you don't know about, or we worry about the affirmation because it might be something that he doesn't like, and therefore it'll be an affirmation bita'ut, or a person can't create a blanket affirmation because of that possibility that there will be nidarim that he won't like, and therefore he doesn't have a full-hearted affirmation at this point in time. Harihein mufarin, if he does, he goes ahead and he nullifies them. Rabbi Elazar omer mufar, chumim omer eno mufar. Rabbi Elazar says it works, chumim say it does not work. So now, your assumption is that the chachamim here say that the husband himself cannot nullify the nidarim in the future. Yet, he is identifying, establishing a shliach to do it on his behalf, and the shliach can do it. Either according to Rabbi Yonatan, literally he can do it. According to Rabbi Shoya, he could have technically done it had it not been for the gzeirat hakatuv. What does that show you? It shows you that even though right now the husband can't do it, nevertheless he can appoint a shliach to do in the future what he can't do today. That goes against the principle that you just established, that a person does not make a shliach for something that he himself cannot do today. So Gemara says, Kasakadatcho, you thought, ki amar Rabbi Shoya li b'derabonon. You are thinking that Rabbi Yoshaya's position is in the sheet of the Rabbanon. Damrei lo matzei mefer. They say the husband's not empowered to do afara today. V'ilav, damar rachmana yisha yikimenu v'yisha yifrenu, apotropos havi mefer. Had it not been for the gzeret hakatuv, ein hachanami, the executor could have done this. Right, so that's the Gemara in Nedarim asks your question. How could he be made for something he didn't hear? There's two opinions in the Gemara. One is that he can do it. The other opinion in the Gemara is that he has to hear it. So only when the husband comes back and hears it, then the hafara will go into effect by the apitropus. V'dilma, aliba d'Rabbi Eliezer. Who says that Rabbi Yoshaya's opinion is following the chachamim? Maybe Rabbi Yoshaya's position is following Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Eliezer says, damar matzi mefer, says a husband can be mefer in the future. That means that he is empowered today to do it. So if that's the case, then he can establish a shliach to do it in the future because he himself can do it today. Yochi. Then why does he need the shliach at all? If he himself can do it today, why does he need to establish a shliach to do it? Just like he can establish an apitropus to say, listen, in the future when you hear my wife's nidarim, go ahead and be made for them. You know what the husband could just do? When my wife takes these nidarim in the future, I want to be made for them. It accomplishes the same thing. Probably a little less work for him too. He could just do it today. So if you're right that Rabbi Elazar says the husband's empowered to do it, why bother appointing a shliach? Just do it yourself. Leif Elayihu. Let him do it himself. Kasavar. Dilma Mishtalina. O Ratachna. O Mitaridna. Maybe I will trip up. I'll be angry. Or I'll be busy. So what the guy worries about is at the time that he is leaving, he's going to be very involved in packing and gathering his possessions, or something might happen there will cause some discord between him and his wife. Whatever the reason is, in the future he's worried that he won't be in a position or he won't remember to be made for the Nidarim in advance. So therefore he puts the apitropus in place so that he doesn't have to worry about it. Tosafot here in the Gemara and the Nidarim also ask, okay, then let him just do it now. He's worried about, oh, when I'm going to leave, I will be so busy I won't remember to do it. So now I appoint the apitropos that says that when I leave, till I come back, you take care of it. Let him just say that by himself. Anything my wife says from the time I leave, he could do the same thing. He could say, well, anything that is in my wife's Nidarim from the time I leave till I come back will be in Mufarim. So there are different answers given. One is that Tosafot over here suggests that he just says that everything is Mufar from now until I come back. Now is too early. Because there might be Nidarim between now and the time he leaves that he will want to keep, or that he will be want to be Mikayim. So he doesn't want to put the Hafara in place yet. So he wants to trigger it in the future. Okay. Still, why can't he do that himself or trigger it himself? So others suggest that this might cause discord between him and his wife, or it might cause problems, which is, he is now basically overriding anything his wife does. So now in the case where he's going abroad and he's not going to have a choice because he's not going to be able to discern the Nidarim, so then he does that. But now, if he does it early on, that's going to make his wife uneasy or cause kitata, some discord between them, because the wife's going to say, look, you don't love me. You're just throwing everything I say out the door. You're not letting me do any of these things. So therefore, he doesn't want to take it early. So that's why he establishes an apitropos to do it on his behalf in the future. And he himself doesn't do it in the future, because then he might be taruled, he might be caught up, there might be something that stops him, or he won't have the ample time to do it, or he won't remember to do it. So that's why he establishes an apitropos up front. The Tosfot over here deals with some very difficult issues, which is that how do people establish messengers in cases where they cannot accomplish something by themselves? For instance, a woman says to her friend, listen, I want you, after you knead this dough, I want you to take off the challah on my behalf. How can the woman establish or send this other woman as her messenger, shliach, her proxy to do this, when the woman herself can't be mafrish the challah today? She's unable to be mafrish challah today because it's not yet chayav in challah. The dough itself is not yet chayav in challah. That means if you can't do it yourself, how are you establishing a shliach in the future to do it on your behalf? The Rabbeinu Tam says, the HPL Lavi Isa Migul Gelet. Velomar Isa Zute Halal Kemach Hashia Nilosh. Because she does have the ability to do it today. She could bring another dough over and be mafrish the challah from that dough on the future dough that's going to be here. And that would work. You can be mafrish challah in anticipation of the dough that's going to come from an existing dough. Therefore, since it's in her power, you can do it. Because Ein Zeh Davar Shelo Ba'olam, that's not considered to be Davar Shelo Ba'olam. Kevin Sheyabiyalda Lalush U'Legalgela Isa. Since she herself could knead the dough, put the water into the flour and knead it, it's as if it exists now, it's within her power to accomplish it. So Tosafot, based on there being Utam, comes up with a big chiddush here, which is that if you have the ability today to do whatever it is that is standing between you and the object, then it's considered as if you have the power to do it and you can appoint a shliach. So as opposed to the case of the woman, when the woman was married at that time, you don't have the ability to change that or marry her no matter what. Even future-wise, you don't control that situation. Therefore, you can't appoint a shliach to marry this woman when she becomes divorced. On the other hand, by the case of the dough, where you have the ability today to go and knead the dough and do whatever you want with the dough, therefore you can establish a shliach to take off the challah in the future because you could have made it into dough today. So you really do have control over it. You do have the ability to create the dough. And you can be mafrish from other dough on this dough now. So it's as if everything is in your control now. And since that's the case, you can appoint a shliach to do it on your behalf in the future. So that's how Tosafot deals with that issue. He says, when we come makom, b'hai time al-chud al-osagil on the Meimar, the matzim avit shliach kan keivan to be adol alush ul-galgel. That in and of itself is not sufficient grounds to do this, because We have a case in the Gemara, Omer, the Chavero, Ktov get the Arusuti, Lika Echnisena, Egershena. Write a get for my Arusa, because after I marry her, I want you to divorce her from me. Harei ze get. Why? Mipnei shebi yado le garsha. Miyo im irtze. Because he has the ability to divorce her, if he wants to. Bai hotam levim to. What about the Yavam? Can the Yavam then say, if I have Yibum with this woman, I want you to prepare a get and divorce her? Ama kami baile. Why is the Gemara asking even a question over there? Why is the Gemara any safek whether the Yavam can do it? Why? Because the Yavam at this moment could have Bia with her, make him his wife, and then divorce her. So he's empowered. He has the ability to conclude the transaction, in a sense, conclude this marriage, and divorce her. So why shouldn't he be able to appoint someone? It's clear that since today he cannot divorce her, he can't establish a shliach. Because he's missing an action. You'd have to say the same thing by the dough. Since he can't do that frasha today, even though you have the ability to do it in the future, that doesn't mean that it's done. So Tosa really has an issue here, and he's not sure whether your ability to do something, even though you haven't done it, already makes it within your purview, and therefore you can establish a shliach, or since you're mechusar matzah, there's an action that is yet to be done, it's out of your ability to accomplish it today, and therefore you cannot establish a shliach. Tosfot brings 2 day old as to whether mechusar matzah is sufficient grounds to make it that you are not able to create a proxy, or able to create a proxy with nafkaminot for everyday life, which is when a woman gives her flower over to her friend to knead it on her behalf and says, take off the challah for me. Can she really do that? Is she really able to establish a shliach in that case? All right, next Mishnah. Harei alai legaleach chatzi nazir, v'shama chaveiro, v'amar va'ani alai legaleach chatzi nazir. So here you have both of them taking the same nether. We quoted this already in the Gemara, that here there's only one item that's stated over here, which is, I am going to sponsor half a nazir. His friend hears that and says, v'ani, me too. I'm also going to sponsor him. And then Alayla the Galeach Chatzi Nazir, what she says now is completely superfluous. He doesn't need to say it at all. But he says it either for clarification, or according to the other opinion there, you needed it to confirm the statement. Zeh Megaleach Nazir Shalem, v'zeh Megaleach Nazir Shalem, Divi Rabbi Meir. Meir says, there's no such thing as half a Nazir, and therefore you got to pay for a whole set of korbanot. You can't pay for half. They can sponsor half a nazir. Even better, if they both do it together, they join together, and they'll pay for a single nazir between them, they'll sponsor it. You should just know that there are different girsaot within the mifarash over here, which seemingly explain this Gemara a little differently as to what the issue is. We're seeing here in the Gemara, the Gemara's issue is simply with the way that he formulated the nether. Is the way that he formulated the nether generate a situation in which he's asking to pay for half of some whole? So there's a whole item, and he wants to pay for half of it, which would be fine. Or is he trying to pay for half of an item that's indivisible? And therefore, when he uses the word chatzi, he's trying to break up something that he can't break up. On the other hand, the Mifaresh focuses very much on whether when you pay for these Nasir's korbanot, are those korbanot good enough for him to be yotze with those korbanot? Meaning that, is your payment and your sponsoring of these korbanot considered to be payment for a korbanot, and they're good korbanot for him to utilize? Or is it because of the way that you formulated it, it's not really a korbanot of a nazir, and therefore he can't utilize them?
In essence, what he says is that if two people together promise the chatzi korbanot, then they can join together to bring it as a single entity that would be then sufficient for the nazir. But if each one independently takes a neder for chatzi, then each one of them is going to have to bring a full set of korbanot for the nazir. It only works when they do it together. And that actually would help to explain why the Mishnah brings the case that it's number one taking a neder, and then number two taking a neder, which according to most of the other Rishonim has no bearing on the case. The second individual, it's just a question of what does chatzi mean. But according to the Mifaresh, it's only when you have these two individuals who each promise a half and together add up to a whole, then it works. But each one independently would not be able to bring a half, and would have to bring a whole.
That's the way the Mefarash establishes the questions. Here's a number of Gersaot. They all revolve around the Nazir using the sponsorship versus what the simpler reading of the Gemara, and the way that we have in our Gersaot in the Gemara, the question is about the person articulating the Neder. Well, how did he articulate it, and whether he formulated it in a way that it is effective, which is Amarava. He says that I'm going to sponsor half the value of the korbanot of Nazir. You can do that. There's a full value of the korbanot. You say half of that. You can sponsor a half of it. But korbanot chatsi Nazir alai. On the other hand, if he says, I'm going to sponsor the korbanot of half a Nazir, kule korban bayi tuye. There he's got to pay for the whole thing. My time, oh. You can't divide a nizirut in half. There's no such thing as half nizirut. You can pay for half the value of the korbanot, but you can't sponsor all the korbanot at half a nazir. There is no such thing as half a nazir. It's an indivisible item, and therefore when you try to make it into half, it doesn't work. There, b'chi pligei. So what's the machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim? The lishna de matnitin. They argue in the way that our lashon of our mishnah is. Rav Meir savar, kein d'ven d'amar hare alai, since he says already, hare alai, korban, nizirut. He already now made himself fully accountable or chayav to sponsor. Nizirut, then when he tries to backtrack on that and say chatsi, it doesn't work. Basically, Rabbi Meir l'shitoto, we've seen Rabbi Meir before. Number one, ein adam mutzi dvarav levatala. A person doesn't speak in vain. So therefore, we're going to make significant all of his statement. Number two is, Rabbi Meir believes, tfos lashon rishon. When a person makes a statement, then we grab the first part of his statement. So when we grab the first part of his statement, he already established himself as a paying for a full nazir. Then afterwards, when he says chetzi, he's trying to backtrack or backpedal out of this. We're not going to let him do that or backpedal out of it because he already took a nazir. It's already effective. And now he can't back out of it because tfos lashon rishon, we put a lot of emphasis on his first statement. And the second statement we ignore or is the words not said the batala, and therefore when he said a real lie, he's already establishing that he's going to bring a full set of korbanot. Rabbanan Sabri, similar to Beit Hillel, neder upitcho imo, upetach imohu. It's a case where he took a neder, and then he qualifies the statement. And since he qualifies the statement, then we look at the statement in totality. Which is, again, they might agree with Rabbi Meir, ein adam mutzi dvarav levatala, but then we have to look at, bigvar dvarav adam nitpas. That a person also, you have to look at the totality of his statement. Not only the first statement, but the totality. And the totality of the statement brings me a neder with a qualifying statement. It tells me exactly how this neder is to be effective. And therefore it's considered to be a single neder by which you explained what you meant when you said, I'm going to sponsor korbanot. You meant half the value of the korbanot. And that's what the chatzi is doing afterwards. It's not a retraction, but rather a part of the statement or the full statement that you are making. Therefore, over there, you could be sponsoring a half a nizirut or half a korban nazir based on the pshita of the chachamim. Right now, the Mishnah says, Hareini nazir, kilishil eli bain. I will be a nazir when I have a son. As Tosfot says over here, perish hoda'a v'shevach l'kodesh baruch hu, shechanani v'zikani v'nonad li bain. Basically, this is a thank you to Hashem for granting me a son. He basically accepts that he will be a Nazir as a, quote-unquote, gift of thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if he's bringing a Korban Todah, in a sense, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for granting him this son. V'nolad lo ben, and he has a child, or he's a Nazir. Then he is a Nazir, the Gemara will say Pshita, of course. V'nolad lo bat, tumtum vadro binus, if his wife gives birth to a daughter, or someone whose sex is undetermined, or unable to be determined, ain't a nazir. Then he's not a nazir. Again, the Gemara will say, pshito. Im amar kishieli vlad, he says, when I have some offspring, I will be a nazir. Afilo no 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 bat tumtum v'androginus, or is a nazir. Then it doesn't matter, whatever the offspring is, whatever child his wife has, that will trigger his nether nazirut. And again, pshita, the Gemara will say pshita. So that the Gemara will ask, what's the chiddush in each of these cases? Hipila ishto, so here now it gets a little more complex. His wife miscarries, inu nazir. He's not a nazir in that case. Where a case where he says, if my wife has a child, if yesh li vlad, then I am a nazir. If his wife miscarries, the Tanakhama says, inu nazir, very understandable, he doesn't have a child here. His wife miscarried, and since she miscarried, there's no child.
On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Yomar, he makes a tnai. Im haya ben kayama, if the child that was born was a viable child, harei ani nazir chuva, then I was already obligated from my previous neder. Vim lav, if not, harei ani nazir nidava. I'm going to bring a nazir nidava, so mimonav shacham chayav now. Either because my previous neder was triggered, or because now I'm voluntarily engaging in a neder nizirut. Either way, I'll be a nazir and then bring the korbanot. The key element between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon is, what do you do in a case of safek nizirut? Rabbi Meir, or the Tanakama says, safek nizirut lakel. So in the first case where his wife miscarried, you have a safek as to whether he's a nazir or not. Safek nizirut lakel, we say, don't worry about it, nothing to do over here. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon believes, safek nizirut lahach mir. Lach mir means you have to do something, but you're still not sure. Even if you say lachmir, you're still not sure that you are a nazir. So how do you solve that problem? You create this tnai, which says, if I'm a nazir based on the neder that I took originally, good. If not, I'm voluntarily becoming a nazir, so mimanav shach, I'm a nazir now. Now, what you have to say here is when a woman miscarries, how do you say that it's a ben kayama, that it was a viable baby, it's dead, she miscarried? The answer, which the Mefarshim explained over here, is kalulo chadashav, that he reached full term. But kalulo chadashav reached full term means either he got to a full 9 months, or in Zayim the Gemara, that meant 7 months, even mikutayim. Here he got into 6 months plus, in that time period he was kalulo chadashav, he would have been a viable baby. Since it would have been a viable baby, maybe that's enough to trigger the neder, even though his wife miscarried at this point. Chazravi alda, if after this point she does give birth to a baby, then or is a nazir. Then, at that time, the Tanakh comes, now you're a nazir, because your neder nizirut covered this, and now you're a nazir. Shimon Omer, Yomar, Imarishon ben Kayama, Harishon Chova. So he says, wait, he might have already discharged this neder, because the first child that was a miscarriage, there he might have been Chayav already. And if, according to Rabbi Shimon, he already kept a nizirut for that. So he says, if the Rishon was a Chova, Zo Nidava. Then this second child, when I'm going to keep it in Zirut now, that's a voluntary case. Bimlav, if not, I rishon nidava, then the first one I did was voluntary, v'zo chova, and the second one is a chova, meaning that we're not sure in the first case whether he should have been a nazir or not. Rabbi Shimon says you still have to deal with that in Zirut. Now he has the second child, so he kept it in Zirut for that one. But we're not sure what type of Zirut he kept for the first child. It could have been because he was obligated. Could have been because he voluntarily engaged to his tanai in a nizirut. The second child, which according to the Tanakhama, this is the first child that we worry about, therefore the neder is triggered. But for Rabbi Shimon, you might have already triggered the neder and accomplished it by the first child. So therefore you have to make another condition here by the second child and say, if the first child was not a viable entity, then I was never a nazir based on my original neder, and now I have to fulfill my neder. On the other hand, if the first child was a ben kayama, that means that I already discharged my neder by the first child. Then I'm opting in voluntarily to become a nazir now, and that's why he has to be a nazir. So according to Rabbi Shimon, he'll be a nazir after the first child that was miscarried, and he'll be a nazir after the second child. Clearly one of them is a voluntary nizirut, we just don't know which one. Therefore he stipulates when he takes each nizirut to cover both if he's obligated and if he is voluntary, and that will clear him up. Even now you'll have to keep two nizirut, according to Rabbi Shimon, whereas according to the Tanakh, you'll have to keep one nizirut, which is after the second child is born. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph.